Welcome back. This is Alfred Wallace with the Decatur Herald and Review for July 18th, 2016. We'll begin part two today with the obituaries from the weekend and from Monday morning. We begin with Saturday, July 16th. Betty Young, Decatur. Betty Jane Young, 89, of Rushville, passed away at 10:35 p.m. Thursday, July 14th, 2016. Heritage Health Therapy and Senior Care in Mount Sterling. Services will be at 11 o'clock, Monday, July 18th, 2016, at the Rushville Free Methodist Church, with Pastor Greg Fish officiating. Interment will follow in the Rushville City Cemetery. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to the service at the church. Memorials are suggested to Rushville Free Methodist Church or First United Methodist Church. Snacks for Students program. Betty entrusted Wood Funeral Home in Rushville with her arrangements. You are invited to share your memories of Betty and leave condolences at www.woodfuneralhome.online. Joe Martin, Mount Zion. Josephine Martin, 87, of Mount Zion, Illinois, passed away at 3:14 a.m. Thursday, July 14th, 2016, in Advocate Broman Medical Center in Bloomington, Illinois. A vigil prayer service for Josephine will be held at 5:30 p.m., Monday, July 18th, 2016, at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home in Mount Zion, followed by a celebration of her life visitation from 6 until 8 p.m. A massive Christian burial will be held at 11 a.m., Tuesday, July 19th, 2016, at Our Lady of the Holy Spirit Catholic Church in Mount Zion, with Reverend Stephen Arispin officiating. Burial will be in the Mount Zion Township Cemetery. Memorials may be made to Our Lady of the Holy Spirit Catholic Church in Mount Zion. Messages of condolence may be sent to the family at www.dawson-wyckoff.com. Robert L. Cundiff, Decatur. Robert L. Bob Cundiff, 71, of Decatur, died Monday, July 11, 2016. Services will be at 11 a.m. Tuesday at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, North Chapel. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Monday and 1 hour before services. Burial will be at Friends Creek Cemetery in Argenta, and memorials may be made to EAA Train a Pilot. May send condolences to www.dawsonwyckoff.com. Dorothy Doyle, Decatur. Dorothy Reynolds Doyle, 95, of Decatur, Illinois, passed away Thursday, July 14th, 2016, at Eastern Star Home in Macon, Illinois. Funeral services will be 10 a.m. Monday, July 18th, 2016, at Britlinger and Earl Funeral Home in Decatur, Illinois, with visitation from 4 to 6 p.m. Sunday, July 17th, at the funeral home, with Eastern Star service at 6 p.m. Burial will be in East Lawn Memorial Gardens in Bloomington, Illinois. Memorials may be made to Shriners Hospital for Children. And condolences may be left to the family in care of Britlinger and Earl Funeral Home at www.britlingerandearl.com. Patty Collins, Decatur. Patty L. Collins, 81, of Decatur, died July 13, 2016, in St. John's Hospital in Springfield, Illinois. Funeral services will be 3 p.m. Saturday, July 16, 2016, in Sites Funeral Home in Moyaqua. Visitation was 1 hour prior to service time. Burial was in Westside Cemetery in Moyaqua, and memorials may be made to Scoville Zoo. Sites Funeral Home in Moyaqua was entrusted with the care and funeral arrangements. Jean Blair, Oakley. Dorothy, or Jean Blair, 88, of Oakley, Illinois, died Thursday, July 14th, 2016, at Decatur Memorial Hospital in Decatur. Funeral services will be at 2 p.m. Monday, July 18th, 2016, which would have been her 89th birthday, at Britlinger and Earl Funeral Home in Cerro Gordo, Illinois. Visitation will be from 4 to 6 p.m. was from 4 to 6 p.m. Sunday, July 17th at the funeral home in Cerro Gordo. Burial was in Cerro Gordo Cemetery. Condolences may be left to the family in care of Brittlinger and Earl Funeral Home. From Sunday, Marjorie Lee Tower, Decatur. Marjorie Lee Tower, née Emshoff, 84, formerly of Decatur, Illinois, passed away in Rochester, Minnesota after an extended battle with leukemia on April 17, 2016. Memorial service for Marjorie will be held at Copper Hall, the Millikan School of Music's performance venue. Service will be held on August 2nd at 1:30 p.m. with a reception following. Memorials may be made to the Mayo Clinic Transplant Center, 200 First Street Southwest, Rochester, Minnesota, 55905. Cody Plopper, Decatur. Cody Joseph Plopper of Decatur died at 1:15 p.m. Thursday, July 7th, 2016 in his residence. A family-led graveside service will be at 10 a.m. Saturday, July 23rd, 2016 in Harrison Township Cemetery. There will be no visitation, and cremation rites have been accorded. Tanzius Logan Funeral Services are assisting the family with these arrangements. Please sign the guestbook at www.tlcelebratingeverylife.com. Eileen Mathern, Decatur. Eileen F. Mathern, 93, of Decatur, passed away on Friday, July 15th, 2016, in Decatur Memorial Hospital. Graveside service to celebrate Eileen's life will be at 10 a.m., Tuesday, July 19th, 2016, in Fairlawn Cemetery, at the corner of King and Taylor Streets. Memorials are suggested to Mound Chapel Church of God. The family of Eileen Mathern is being served by Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home, Decatur, Illinois. Send condolences to the family at www.gracelandfairlawn.com. Bob Cundiff, Decatur. Robert L. Bob Cundiff, 71, of Decatur, died on Monday, July 11th, 2016. Services will be at 11 a.m. Tuesday at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home in North Chapel. Visitation is from 5 to 7 p.m. Monday and 1 hour before services. Burial will be at Friends Creek Cemetery at Argenta. Memorials may be made to EAA train a pilot. Grace Duffield, Decatur. On July 6, 2016, Grace Ann Duffield, née Schaefer, died peacefully in her sleep at the age of 90. Services. A funeral mass will be celebrated at the Most Sacred Heart Catholic Church, 350 East 4th Street in Eureka, Missouri, 63025, on Monday, July 25th, 2016, at 11 a.m. Visitation will be held at 10 a.m. at the church prior to the service. Interment will be held at Resurrection Cemetery at 2:30 p.m. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to the St. Vincent de Paul Society, care of Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church, 3850 Lourdes Drive, Decatur, Illinois, 62526. Betty Graham, Decatur. Betty Ann Graham of Punta Gorda, Florida, passed away Tuesday, June 21st, 2016, at the age of 92. Betty was born on July 21st, 1923, to William J. and Greta C. Barnes in Decatur, Illinois. The family is requesting, in lieu of flowers, that memorials be made to the Mighty 8th Air Force Museum, P.O. Box 1992, Savannah, Georgia, 31402. Internment services to celebrate Betty and husband Charles's life, will be held at 1 p.m., Friday, August 19th, 2016, in Star Hope Mausoleum in Graceland Cemetery at 2091 North Oakland Avenue, Decatur, Illinois, 62526. Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home is assisting the family. Janice Nichols, Mount Zion. Janice Nichols, 78, of Mount Zion, Illinois, passed away on Saturday, July 9th, 2016, at Barton Stone Nursing Home in Jacksonville, Illinois. A graveside memorial will be held at 11 a.m. on August 13th, 2016, at lot number 80 of the Mount Zion Township Cemetery. Finally, there is one obituary from Monday. Margaret Quintens, Decatur. Margaret Quintens, 100, of Decatur, passed away on Saturday, July 16th, 2016, in Symphony of Decatur. Honoring Margaret's wishes, cremation will take place at Graceland Fairlawn Cremation Center. There will be no public services. Private family burial will be in St. Mary's Catholic Cemetery. The family of Margaret Quintens is being served by Moran and Goble Funeral Home and Cremation Services. And now some news from the weekend. From Saturday. Clinton remains hopeful. Lawmakers say power station talks are progressing. Clinton. The window of opportunity to reverse the decision of Exelon Corporation to close the Clinton Power Station next year continues to become narrower. Yet, a group of Republican state lawmakers said Friday, while standing in front of a group of over 100 of the plant's employees, who were seated on bleachers with the plant in the background across Clinton Lake, discussions to keep the facility open are continuing. Time is a factor, said State Representative Bill Mitchell, Republican from Forsyth. We've got a ways to go as negotiations continue. We've got to bring a lot of different people together. Mitchell said the economic impact from the plant can be felt throughout central Illinois. House Minority Leader Jim Durkin, Republican from Western Springs, isn't sure how far down the road before the point of no return is reached where closure cannot be reversed. Exelon announced on June 2nd plans to close the plant after lawmakers failed to approve a financial incentive plan for clean energy that includes nuclear power. Company officials have said the closure decision can be reversed, but time is running out as it follows a series of procedural notifications. The first notification came in June as the company notified the Nuclear Regulatory Commission of its plan. Durkin said the impact cannot be overlooked as he pledged to do whatever he can to make the negotiations go quicker. If the plant shuts down, it would have beyond a devastating impact, Durkin said. I will do everything within my power to ensure we don't lose more jobs within the state. This is no time to continue on with that terrible trend. Durkin said a compromise will be needed, as is the case when legislation regarding large energy-related issues are involved. He said the fact that nobody has walked away from discussions is a sign that a deal remains possible. Christian Small, plant's manager for nuclear reactor engineering, is among the employees who are unsure of what their future will hold if the plant does close. Small feels like he is in a good spot in his career, as he's worked in Clinton for 15 years after receiving a degree in nuclear engineering at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. We haven't given up hope, Small said. We'll continue to support the community, whether it's next year or 20 years from now. Small said employees feel a close connection with Clinton and surrounding areas as they get involved in various ways, including Habitat for Humanity or the 4-H Club. Employees from the plant are the biggest supporter of the United Way in DeWitt County, said Tim Falwell, Clinton city manager. They call Clinton home, Falwell said. We will survive, but we'll look and act different. The impact of the planned closure on taxing bodies within the area, such as the county, library, schools, and Richland Community College, has been discussed, Falwell said. The city does not receive tax dollars directly from the plant, but Falwell said the impact will be felt in other ways. The piece of property provides 50% of the tax base for the county, DeWitt County Board member Terry Ferguson said. Mitchell said the Clinton School District receives 53% of its revenue from the power plant, and Richland is expecting to lose more than $1 million if the plant closes as planned. With about 700 workers, Exelon is the area's largest employer, said Marion Brizard, Clinton Area Chamber of Commerce and Tourism Bureau Executive Director. In addition, the plant supports 1,200 indirect jobs. It contributes more than $13 million in local tax revenue to area schools and local governments. I'd hate to see it close, Brizard said. It's not too late to reverse the direction. Between the Clinton plant and another facility slated for closure a year later in the Quad Cities, Exelon estimated an impact of 4,200 direct and indirect jobs, with $1.2 billion in economic activity lost. Discussions to reach an agreement to keep the plant open and, in turn, save jobs will continue, said State Representative Dan Brady, Republican from Bloomington. We'll do everything we can to keep the good-paying jobs in Clinton, Brady said. Mitchell said the issues involved aren't based on political party affiliation. He doesn't care whether the plant employees who are behind him are Republican or Democrat. I just want to keep them working, Mitchell said. We should work together, because we care about the future of Illinois. We've got too much riding on this. Although the legislature adjourned on June 30th without a deal in place, and isn't scheduled to meet again until the fall veto session in November, Mitchell expressed confidence lawmakers can be called back as soon as a deal is reached, as talks have gotten incrementally better. He said the issue is important enough, where it won't take long after that, to get the legislation that is needed approved. Mitchell said Governor Bruce Rauner is aware of the impact of the plant closure and has been involved in discussions with the company. Mitchell said groups, including ones representing clean energy and the coal power industry, have participated in the discussion process. The negotiations involve legislation that would place Illinois nuclear plants on a level playing field with renewables such as wind and solar, which receive subsidies from Illinois ratepayers. Also locally, Youth Lead Charge for Peace. Hess Park Unity event draws from across community in hope. Decatur. 4 days after an incident that had the potential of tearing a town apart, young people from throughout the city gathered together with a positive and hopeful spirit after a few young leaders decided it is time for a serious change. There's individuals out here who have tried to kill each other, and they're united, said the Reverend Courtney Carson, 34, one of the organizers of the event, which drew about 200 people to Hess Park on Friday evening. There's individuals in this park who would not have spoken to each other a week ago. Now they're speaking to each other. That's real. That's the power of prayer. Carson, who organized a rally on Monday evening to bring peace to the city following the shooting of a suspect by a police officer earlier that day, said it was remarkable what positive results can follow when preachers unite and pray together. When preachers unite, the people unite, said Carson, a minister at Antioch Missionary Baptist Church. Carson credited Aliyah Buck and Rico Baylock, two of the speakers Monday outside the courthouse, for successfully organizing the Friday event, which included full-court basketball games with referees, grilled hot dogs and chips, and upbeat socializing. We planned the event here in 3 days. We called it Unifying the Streets in Peace and Love, said Buck, 18, a MacArthur High School graduate who plans to attend Richland Community College. A lot of people here have different gang affiliations, gangster disciples, vice lords, east side, west side. Everyone's coming together. No one's angry. Everyone's having a good time. We don't have to be angry. We have to get together. Buck said she believes many of the challenges young people have stems from a lack of positive activities in Decatur. If you don't have anything positive to do, all they do is negative, she said. A Chicago native who moved to Decatur a couple of years ago, Buck said she learned at the character at the charter school she attended, that she had a purpose in life. They instilled in us we are to be agents of change throughout our life, she said. One of her goals is to promote education and professionalism. There's not enough people in our community to exemplify things that need to be done, said Buck, a 2-time student council president at MacArthur and employee at McDonald's restaurant. Yolanda Reed, Aliyah's mother, says she is proud of her daughter, especially for the way she spoke up at the prayer vigil Monday. She said it did disturb her to read negative comments on Facebook in response to Aliyah's remarks. After moving here from Chicago, Reed said she has a different perspective about Decatur than those who have always lived here. There's so much focus on the negative and the violence. People say this is a little Chicago, but it's not, Reed said. Next to Chicago, this is like the Garden of Eden. There's so much violence and destruction and death, it's nearly impossible to have peace of mind there. It's out of control. She said the one shooting incident that occurred Monday in Decatur was blown out of proportion. Everyone was rubbed a little raw because of the other incidents, she said, referring to the shooting deaths of black men by officers in Minnesota and Louisiana. Reed said she believed some people were upset because Aliyah told black men they should read books and pull up their pants, which they perceived to be insults. It upset her to see negative, nasty posts on Facebook about her daughter. She believes that black people are stereotyped in a negative light, as they are all from families who have children who are imprisoned, rather than seeing that most families raise positive children. God created us equal, but we're not treated equal, Reed said, adding that won't happen until the unequal treatment is addressed. Blaylock, 27, said people in Decatur did not react violently to the shooting because we had it in our mind to stay peaceful and not be violent, like everyone else in the world. After being a gang leader and spending most of his life going in and out of prison and jail, Blaylock said he recently took a positive turn, largely thanks to the staff of drug court. The change is the way I think about life, said Blaylock, who now serves as a mentor to young people. At the Friday event, he counsels children not to react in negative situations with violence. He credited prayer with giving him strength and wisdom to speak at Monday's vigil. I prayed before I did it for God to lead me, he said. I explained, all African Americans are not thugs. Don't stereotype us just because you see how we dress. The person you see dressed like that may be the next Barack Obama, a doctor, or a police officer. All lives matter, not just black, not just white, not just Hispanic. I really want to unite my city. Bria Hearns, 22, just moved to Decatur from the Chicago area 2 months ago, but she already feels like she has a purpose to help young people thrive. She is a member of Life Changers Church and is studying to be a youth minister in the online program of Valor Christian College. It is amazing, after the situation happened early this week, the youth gained determination to do things for themselves, said Hearns, who recently landed a job as a sales rep with a phone company store. I notice there is a lot of division in Decatur. God is really calling his leaders right now. He is calling his leaders of the youth. She credited Blaylock with being a strong leader, respected by young people, who spent tremendous energy running around the city to unite people from different groups. At the rally, he said, "We can't do this without God," Hearns said. "God has definitely positioned me in the company of the right people for his glory. I have a heart for inner city kids. I have a heart for the hood. God is proving himself that it's possible that things can be done." The other day at the rally, to see all those people with the mayor and the chief of police. It was peaceful, and God was in the midst of that, for people to be receptive and ready for change. Ed Culp, chief of the Decatur Park District Police, was the only officer who appeared at the event during its first few hours. He kept a low profile, walking through the crowd, greeting people with a cheerful manner. "I loved the fact that the tone was set earlier in the week down at the courthouse," Culp said. We were glad it could continue on such a positive note. Decatur Interim Police Chief Getz and I have been talking. We were confident in the leadership tonight, and that has proven to be true. There is no doubt in my mind that Decatur will make a positive out of the negative. In local news from Sunday, alleged victims multiply. James P. Smith accused of theft from elderly clients. James P. Smith, who was arrested and released on bond last month for allegedly stealing more than $57,000 from a senior couple, is back in jail on charges of stealing $99,000 from two more unrelated victims. A fifth alleged victim was meeting with officials on Friday, which could lead to more charges against the Mount Zion man, who will turn 60 on Saturday. A sixth possible victim called the Macon County State's Attorney's Office on Friday to discuss another case. Smith is being held in jail on $200,000 bond, requiring a $20,000 cash bail to be released. The Macon County State's Attorney's Office is applying a seldom-used statute in an attempt to freeze Smith's assets and gain restitution for the victims. Smith was arrested on June 23rd for allegedly stealing $57,875 from an 86-year-old man and his wife, while serving as power of attorney for the husband from December 2013 to October 2015. He allegedly wrote checks from the victim's accounts in that case, which he used to make mortgage payments, pay an attorney's fee, give money to a relative, and withdraw cash. He was released from jail the following day after posting a $5,000 cash bail. In that case, six felony counts were filed against Smith, two counts each of aggravated identity theft, theft over $10,000, and financial exploitation of the elderly. His arraignment in that case is scheduled for July 26th. After a Herald and Review account of this arrest was published, two other victims came forward, women 80 and 87 years old, claiming they were also victimized by Smith. They were both clients of Smith's, who worked as a life insurance agent out of a Forsyth office. On Wednesday, Smith was arrested in those cases. He was charged with four felony counts in the case of the 80-year-old victim, from whom he allegedly stole nearly $32,000, two felony counts for allegedly stealing approximately $58,000 from the 87-year-old woman. Smith is due in court on July 22nd to present his attorney for all his cases. The state is attempting to attach Smith's funds to pay restitution to his alleged victims. Anyone who suspects that they have been victimized by James P. Smith is asked to call the Macon County State's Attorney, Dave Cook, at 217-424-1405 or the Elder Fraud Hotline at 217-615-7582. Once again, this has been Alfred Wallace reading the Decatur Herald and Review for July 18th, 2016, and I hope to be reading again with you soon. Have a good day.